Right about here, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to get yourself and your soul together.
Somebody's gonna get him, and somebody's gonna get him foot.
Hey, boy! Hey, boy!
It's a very, very personal meeting.
Oh! And what the hell kind of description is that?
This man will make your bladder splatter.
You ain't nothing! Okay?
Does go well with it.
Damn shame how they screwed up your show. Nice little program. Not that I ever watched it.
Greetings, everybody. My name is Jim Shear, and today, Yin's Love, Season 5, Episode 11 of Breaking Bad, titled Confessions. And joining me tonight, music television producer and podcast veteran, Mark Laux.
Happy to be here, Jim.
No.
And hello, Yinzers.
Yes, and I forgot to say, fellow Yinzer, Mark Laux.
Yes, so I am one of those of the Yins that you just referred to earlier.
Yeah, so it's very appropriate that you appear on Yin's Love. And I got to point out to people that this isn't a Breaking Bad podcast. We do a lot of things on Yin's Love, and it originates all the way back to Pittsburgh.
So oh, yeah.
It's great that we have a true Pittsburgher on today. Question for you before we start. When was the last time you did a podcast?
It has probably been, I would say maybe a year. I would say within the last year, I did at least one, but there was definitely a stretch there where I was doing sometimes two a week. So I've definitely slowed down. I've dusted off my podcast shoes, so I think I'm good to go for this one.
Because Mark had or has a podcast called Hypothetically Speaking.
Yes, sir.
So you did one of those within the last year?
Yeah, we did. I don't think we even ever released it, but you can still listen to Hypothetically Speaking on iTunes. Check it out. It's still there. And I think I think the humor holds up, Jim. You were on an episode.
Yeah, it's timeless material.
Right.
It's all hypothetical questions. So
exactly.
Yeah, you can listen 20 years from now. But let's get into Season 5, Episode 11, Confessions. What we do on the Yin's Love podcast, we will recap the episode. Mark, feel free to chime in whenever. We begin with Todd, his uncle, and his uncle's bud in a diner. And Todd is bragging about the glory days when they ripped off a train, saying it was maybe the biggest train heist in the history of mankind. Uncle Jack seems to be impressed, because I was afraid that Todd was going to tell the story, and Uncle Jack was going to say, well, when I was younger, I did this. But no, he seemed sort of impressed, but then he had to hit the head. And just the way he said that, he's just a bad guy. Classic villain. Goes into the bathroom, wipes some blood off of the toe of his steel-toed boot, and then throws the I don't think that was toilet paper. It was stronger than toilet paper. Throws that into the toilet. Question for you, Mark. Did that flush? Did that go all the way down?
I mean, we can only speculate, but the camera definitely cut away before, and I think Vince Gilligan definitely did that on purpose. So I'm assuming that will come up later as being some sort of a plot point. I don't know how big, but he definitely showed us the toilet and the flush and the unfinished flushing on purpose, for sure.
Maybe, you know, maybe the waitress goes in. She's like, I had an icky feeling about these guys. She sees the towel in the toilet, puts two and two together and whatnot. So we'll see. But like I speculated last week on the podcast, Mark, and I might be wrong because, well, we'll talk about it, but I thought that they were going to set up Walt as sort of a redeemed good guy, and he was going to go head-to-head with Uncle Jack. And maybe that gun is for Uncle Jack and his crew.
Well, they're obviously, I think that scene said a whole lot because, as we've seen in past seasons, there's a whole lot of exposition in those scenes, and sometimes we don't know the full story until episodes down the road, but I think we can take a couple things from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that clan right there, no pun intended, because I think we all saw the tattoos on the neck and all that.
I know.
I really think that they will come into be a huge factor. And I think that Todd kind of discussing loudly a train heist in a public place.
Right.
I mean, that again, I think that points to kind of his carelessness and maybe his immaturity. And I think that'll come back to bite Walt down the road. So I think that scene, although it's on a surface level, it was just, you know, them in a diner telling stories. But I think there were a lot of things in there. And at the very end, actually entering into New Mexico, they're going to be a big part of the storyline. That's what I took away from that scene. So, yeah.
And if I'm a meth head in Albuquerque, it's just not my day. Because you had Gus Fring, who ran his business like a business. And then you had Walt, who was also very precise. And then Declan kind of let things slide. And now you have Uncle Jack watching the business. And Uncle Jack is not like Walt. Walt had to kill that fly before he could cook meth. Uncle Jack is leaving bloody towelettes in the toilet. It's a different game now.
It's a bit of carelessness, yes. You know, obviously. I don't think that they won't reign as meth kings in New Mexico for long.
Okay. So, we go to commercial, we come back, it's Jesse versus Hank. And if this was network TV, Hank says a few things to Jesse, and Jesse says, yeah, let's go get Mr. White, but this is not network TV. Hank says there's trouble in paradise, things aren't so good. I did like, though, when Hank said, yeah, my brother-in-law, Walter White, and Jesse looked up. It was an involuntary reflex, and he's like, aha, the look. All he needed was that look, and he's like, all right. He's like, now I know 100% for sure that it's Walt. And then he's like, well, are we going to talk? And then Jesse says, not to you. And then that's the end of that scene. So then we have Saul and Jesse talking things over. What I forget what happened in that scene. The first time it was Saul and Jesse.
I think it was Saul sort of yelling at him for throwing money out a window, which is fair.
Okay. And then one of the funniest scenes of the whole episode, Walt Jr., you hear his voice, and he said, hey, Dad, I'm home, because last week everyone was saying, well, where was Walt Jr. in all of this? But we did rationalize that Hank and Walt met in the morning, and then Hank and Marie went over to the White House, maybe in the afternoon when Walt Jr. was at school. Walt's gone all day bearing money. He comes back late at night, as Walt Jr. says in this episode. So luckily for Walt Jr., he missed all of this drama that was going down at the White House. And then Walt, whew, such a smooth liar. Whew, his game, so tight. He's like, listen, you know, listen, the cancer's back. I fell down. That's what happened to the eye. But you know what? Go over to Aunt Marie's house. And then Walt Jr. says, no, come on, Dad, I can't do that. So still, and Walt, talking about smooth line, it only gets better in this episode. So Hank comes home from work. Marie says, did you tell them? And Hank's like, not yet. And she's like, you got to tell him. You got to tell him we're going to go to jail. And Hank says, Marie, listen, don't tell me how to do my job. Then we have a scene between Walt and Skyler. And all we hear is Walt saying, this is my confession with Skyler behind the camera. What did you think was going to be included in that confession? Or should I say, were you surprised by that confession?
I honestly, I can't lie and said that I saw it going where it did. I just assumed that it would. I honestly couldn't get into his head, so I don't even know if I tried at that point. I was just eagerly anticipating the commercial break to be over with. I honestly had no idea, and like you'll say in a minute, I was definitely satisfied with where it did end up going.
See, my hypothesis was just thrown out the window, because I thought for sure these last eight episodes was going to be the redemption of Walter White, and then he gets the classic villain Uncle Jack at the end. This was not a redemption of Walter White move. This is a classic Heisenberg move, and we see that Walt has become an exceptional liar. And I was talking to someone today and they said, Bryan Cranston is such a good actor and he was an actor acting and it's just amazing. And I said, yeah. The tears. So what happens is if someone listens to this podcast 5 years from now and they forget what episode we're talking about, you've got Walt, Skyler, Hank and Marie and the Taqueria. And a lot of people speculated on the internet that Walt chose this place. It's a family-friendly restaurant. And if you're in a family-friendly restaurant and you're a DEA agent, you're probably not going to do anything too violent. You knew, because it's Vince Gilligan and crew, that the waiter was going to come up and say something goofy. And he did. He told him that they make guacamole at the table. Then he sensed the bad vibes. He's like, all right, I'll give you guys a second. Marie's like, Walt, you should just kill yourself. Walt's taken aback. Skyler's taken aback. He slides the DVD across the table. And for a second, you're feeling for Walter White. You're like, he's confessing and you want him to die. And then Hank and Marie pop in the DVD. And what a performance. A performance that would make Meryl Streep jealous. Dang.
I mean, to me, you can't be more satisfied as a fan of the show, because I don't think anyone really truly can say that they saw that coming, but when you look at it, everything that he says in that quote-unquote confession, it all, you can connect all the dots and make sense of that story. And I think as, you know, they're watching it, I think Hank and Marie are sort of realizing, or at least definitely Hank is, that that story sort of checks out.
Yeah.
You know, his relationship, everything, and what I wonder is how long Walt kind of had that in his back pocket. I don't know, you know, maybe he thought it was inevitable that this might happen, so he kind of had cooked up this story, you know, prior to all this falling apart around him. Or he just is such a good storyteller and liar and actor that he was able to just think of that on the spot. But that was brilliant, because now I don't think Hank has anywhere to go. I mean, he has to have someone like Jesse speak up and be a witness, but I don't think right now he has a thing against Walt, and Walt sort of, you know, he's off the hook as far as that goes.
Whew. Covered every corner. Explained away the entire drug empire. Even goes back to day one when he's riding with Walt in the car on a small meth bust. And that was the day that he reconnected with Jesse. And then he goes through killing Gus Fring because of... What did he say? He killed Gus Fring because the twins failed? I forget how he connected that.
Something like that. Yeah,
but
yeah.
He covered every corner. He brought up...
But the things that he didn't say, you know, you can just figure how someone would take all this news. They would go back and connect the dots. They would see pictures of Hank with Gus Fring taking pictures at, you know, different events, at Gus Fring being at the hospital whenever Hank was there recovering from that attempted hit. You know, so, you know, there's a lot more behind what Walt's saying. There's a bigger story that he could have, you know, went into even more detail. But you kind of can just draw your own conclusions there, and you realize how screwed Hank really is.
He paid for Hank's health insurance. And then I like at the end how Walt throws Skyler in. And basically, this confession clears Skyler. Because Hank and Marie might legitimately think now that... Well, I don't know. Hank and Marie, do they know that Skyler was in on it from day one? There's some ambiguity there.
But Skyler wasn't really in on it from day one.
That's true. You're right.
A little later on. I think that in the previous episode, Hank sort of, when he confronted Skyler about it, he kind of mentioned, I don't know, you know, what kind of spell sort of Walt has you under and that sort of thing. So he was, you know, he kind of knew that she was involved somehow, but he wasn't placing a lot of blame on her, because he realized how evil Walt was. And that makes sense. And, you know, so I think even still in the restaurant, I don't know now after watching the confession, but even now when Hank was leaving the restaurant, he said something to the effect of, you know, and you're going to go down with him if you don't, you know, start acting right sooner or later. Something to that effect.
Because, yeah, I remember, I mean, it was only last night. Actually, this morning. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But after the confession, I thought, well, Skyler's in the clear. Because if anyone else watches this, they're like, okay, well, Skyler obviously knew nothing about it. And Hank and Marie might now even think that, oh, well, Walt was telling Skyler this, so that makes sense, and that's why she was kind of, you know, nervous to talk to Hank, and, you know, I need a lawyer, Hank, because I know what you did. You're making my husband do this. So now maybe in the back of Hank and Marie's head, if Walt would die for whatever reason, maybe they can still have a, you know, a peaceful family relationship, thinking that Walt lied to Skyler, if that makes sense.
I don't think that there's a peaceful family relationship that's going to exist between those two from here on out. But that's a really interesting point that you bring up, that, you know, she's known about this quote-unquote confession for a little while now, or at least, you know, whenever she found out that Hank knew. I don't know, but that's interesting to think that in the restaurant, she was kind of playing that part.
Yeah, so I think the brilliant part of the, even though this is bad Walt, this is Heisenberg, Skyler, no strings attached now. She seems just like an innocent wife who was along for the ride and didn't know what was going on. Bam. Shocker. Bad Heisenberg, and we don't know how Hank plays it now. So then, immediately after that scene, Hank goes to Marie, $177,000. She's like, I thought it was the gambling money. What was I supposed to do? I wanted you to walk again. So, you know, that was just a wife being a caring wife. And then we have Walt versus Jesse.
Wait, no, Jim.
Yes.
That you knew when that was going on that had to come back in the storyline. We knew that was, you know, I think watching that and seeing them pay for that, you realize, okay, now they're very much intertwined. So I had a feeling that definitely that would play a role down the road, and obviously, as Hank put it, it was the nail in his coffin.
Yep. I speculated last week if that was going to ever be revealed, just because Hank stumbled upon all this information, and I'm like, well, you know, that's probably just part of the bundle. Him with Fring, and him at the nursing home, and the health insurance, but I'm glad that they addressed it, and Breaking Bad, it's always been a fan-friendly show, so that's all out in the open. Okay, $177,000. Hank is screwed. So then, Mark, let's take a trip out to the desert. Walt versus Jesse. I didn't think that Jesse was going to die, but then when the scene was actually happening and Walt embraces Jesse at the end, and let's back up a little bit. Walt basically says to Jesse, you know what? You need to start new. Saul knows someone. Get out of town. Start a new life. And then Jesse, he's been wanting to say this, I was going to say for years, but all of this has happened within one calendar year, it seems, in Breaking Bad lore. He said, would you stop working me? He's like, you're working me, man. You're working me. So...
Well, I think, I mean, part of me thinks that he still is Walt's only friend. He's the only one that he can truly, you know, he has history with. He can talk to him about. So when he's talking to him in a fatherly way, he, to me, lures me in thinking that, okay, this is sincere. What he's saying is genuine, you know, concern for Jesse. But, you know, then he snaps out of it pretty quickly, just as Jesse, you know, snaps at Walt. But I don't think it's 100% self-interest. Obviously, there's self-interest there for Walt and self-preservation. But I do think that there is a fatherly aspect to him and Jesse, because they've been through so much together. And he, like I said, I really do feel like that's pretty much his only friend left.
I think Walt sucked you in too. Because during this whole scene, I was thinking to myself, does Walt care for Jesse, or is Walt just working Jesse like he said? And then he gave him the hug, and I thought, is that a real hug, or is this a hug? Please, get out of town. Just get out of town. It'd be so much easier for me. And then when he was hugging Jesse, I thought he was going to shoot Jesse, because that was a perfect scene where he could have just grabbed the gun out of his coat and bam. Sorry, Jesse, I had to do it. I had to do it, Jesse. that did not happen.
I think we'll have to wait. Well, I don't know. Maybe another episode for that.
The hug. And you know what? When they did hug, it felt a little icky. So I'm assuming that it wasn't a hug filled with love. And then the show gets very exciting. The ending. Big ending. We've got Jesse in the office of Saul. Jesse has agreed to leave town. Saul calls his person. that happened in another episode where he said, oh, I could call someone and ask for like a Hoover vacuum cleaner. And once I do it, I can only call him once. He's like, you sure? I'm sure. Okay, let's do it. So he calls the guy. He's like, here's some money. Just so you're taken care of. Do you have a telephone? No, I don't have a telephone. Here's a Hello Kitty phone. Once again, love the Breaking Bad humor. And Vince Gilligan says they have to inject humor. Otherwise, it's a very dark show and you just don't want to watch it. So Jesse has his Hello Kitty telephone, pulls out a bag of weed, smokes it just like he did a couple episodes. Saul says, no, you can't do that, Jesse. Listen, this guy, you can't have anything on you. Put it out. So he does put out his joint, but he keeps the marijuana. Saul sees this. Saul goes out to get a bag of money, and he tells Huel, listen, you need to lift that marijuana. So Jesse walks out, bumps into Huel. Huel, I found out, he's an actual comedian, and I've been falling in love with Huel the past few episodes, and he's like, excuse me? You don't see what happens. So then the next scene, Jesse's sitting out on the road. He's waiting for the guy to pick him up. To bring him to his brand new life. He reaches for his weed. There is no weed there. Then he grabs for his cigarettes, and it all comes back. And once again, this is why Breaking Bad is so brilliant. This is why Breaking Bad is not network TV, because if this was network TV, you'd have 20 flashbacks. You'd have the flashback to Brock. We know what's going down. Jesse goes into rage, and at that point, when I was watching Mark, I rewound my DVR. And Tori's like, no, what are you doing? I said, listen, I want to see. If you rewind the scene, you see Huel bump into Jesse, take the weed out of his pocket, and give Saul a glance.
You actually see it.
You see it.
And, wow.
And then I love how they foreshadowed this in the first episode of this cycle when he was smoking his joint out in the lobby. Like, man, you can't do that out here. So Jesse breaks into Saul's office in a rage. Saul goes for a gun. He takes the gun from Saul, puts it to his head, and Saul's like, what are you doing? He's like, you stole. He's like, no, I stole the weed because I told you that you couldn't have it on you or the guy wouldn't pick you up. I thought that was brilliant. I needed that because all the naysayers on the internet would say, well, Huel just had this big, he had this big project working with Kubi where they put all this money into a van, so he wouldn't need to steal some kid's weed bag. But I loved how they set that up. It explains everything away. Saul has a little bit of a performance because he said, well, listen, Walt said he just wanted to help you out. He wanted to save you. But your wife brought it to my attention a couple seasons ago that if you freeze one of the frames, Saul's receptionist is shredding a paper that is Brock's school schedule.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's been in on it since, the start.
So Saul does know about it. Jesse, he's okay, whatever. And then the episode ends with Jesse pouring gasoline all over the White House.
Pretty intense scene.
Oof. Wow. And then now some people, let's begin by saying that some people, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and I read a lot of recaps. Some people do not like the flash forwards in Breaking Bad because they say it takes away all of the suspense. For example, we know that Jesse does not burn down the house because we saw the house, although in bad condition, it was not burned down in the first episode of this cycle. So what do you think of the flash forwards?
I don't mind them. I think they add something to the episodes that we see them in. But I don't think that it gives anything away, really. It just adds more confusion. I think, obviously, the house doesn't burn down. I think maybe Walt Jr. is there. I think that's what we're probably going to see in the next episode, at least if they pick up on that scene. I believe, you know, he'll see Walt Jr. and maybe the baby, and he'll stop in his tracks. But the interesting thing, thinking back to those flash forwards, is, you know, who puts Heisenberg on the on the wall? Is that
yeah.
someone that broke in? Is that Jesse? Is he trying to, you know, I don't know. I don't, you know, so it really, it doesn't give you any answers. It just really adds to the confusion of Breaking Bad. But I think one of the theories that keeps coming back is that Walt is going to fake his death. And I thought about it again after seeing this episode and thinking about that flash forward because of that situation with the house. And I know, I realize this is a past episode, Jim, maybe you already covered it, but was the neighbor surprised or scared when she saw Walt? As in, is this someone that she knew was a, you know, kingpin in the meth world? Or does she think this was a, you know, a guy who died and now she's looking at him?
She gives the impression that she thought he was dead, or she's been watching the local news nonstop and thought to myself, I thought he was a nice guy. He's a drug kingpin. So I think
it's one of the two. I'm just wondering which one of the two it is, because we got to go somewhere from here. I mean, you know, I think the next episode is obviously going to be a huge turning point for a lot of characters. And I think Jesse is at the forefront of that. I think we will know Jesse's fate in the next episode.
Whew. And for the naysayers on the flash forwards, I say there's tension either way. So say we don't get that flash forward and you have Jesse pouring the gasoline, you think to yourself, oh, he's going to burn the house down. So there's some tension there. But now there's tension for us. We're like, well, why doesn't he burn the house down? And
right,
that's
exactly
what we're speculating. So we're thinking differently.
Right.
And there's tension and suspense either way. And then I forgot the scene where Walt's at the car wash. He gets the phone call from Saul and he gets the gun underneath the Coke machine. Saving it for a rainy day, and guess what? That rainy day has come. Code red.
I mean, I'm sorry I'm not a gun expert, but my first question was, does that still work? I mean, does it have to thaw out? I'm not a gun expert. Maybe you should have got one on the show, but that was kind of a... I think that scene, going back to that one, it's really interesting how Skyler has turned a blind eye to the lying. She knows he's lying. She's seen this for years straight, but now that she's on the other side, she's accepting it. And she's not questioning it. I think that's a really interesting change in her character. She's now a part of Walt's lie, and she's playing right along with it. When, you know, first half of this series, that's what she hated so much about Walt, and all she wanted was the truth, and now she's part of the big lie. So I think that scene where he went in to get the gun was really telling, you know, of her character and just how far she's come to the dark side, and she's actually starting to break bad herself.
So you thought that she knew. You thought she knew he was lying.
Oh, I know she knows that he's lying. I mean, she was picking up on these cues. Like I said, the entire time he was running the meth empire, she got used to his lying. So she knows how he lies. She knows how he acts when he lies, and all those, you know, accusations that he was lying all turned out to be true. And I don't think that all of a sudden she's going to forget how he acts when he's obviously up to something.
Because I was trying to watch it both ways. And during the first episode of the cycle, at the beginning, he's talking about where he should put the air fresheners. And Skyler's like, all right, whatever, Walt. And I'm like, well, maybe he just talks about random crap like this all day. Like, okay, I'm going to work on the air freshener. You know what? There's something on the Coke. And she's like, whatever, Walt, you know, you're not in the drug game anymore, and I know you're trying to be the best car wash owner you can. So I was looking at it both ways. So maybe she knew he was lying.
Okay.
Maybe this is just the lives they live now.
Yeah, I think she's a part of it.
Okay.
I really do.
My favorite two lines of the episode, and Bob Odenkirk, you know, we think of him as a funny guy. He had to step up his drama game on this episode. Played it well. Good actor. I like after he's bleeding and Jesse runs out of the office, he looks to Huel and he says, what am I paying you for? So I thought that line was great. And then I don't know why this line stuck with me, but he's trying to convince Jesse to do this, this, and this and get out of town. And he's like, you know what? Some people are immune to good advice. Classic Saul Goodman right there.
If he's the most lovable guy on the show, he has to be at this point, right? I mean,
do you watch Talking Bad?
I don't.
Okay, because he was on Talking Bad last night. And I'm glad they said it. Bob said that everyone loves his character because he's really good at what he does. And even if you don't agree with what he does, he's just so good. And it's true. He thinks of everything.
Yeah. He's a guy that you definitely would want to have on your side if you knew him.
Because even in this episode, when Walt was looking underneath the car for a tracker, he's like, Walt, all you need to do is use this. So it would be a shame if Saul got killed off the episode. And I was wondering if Jesse was going to shoot him, because I remember Vince Gilligan always saying that he wanted there to be a Saul Goodman spinoff after Breaking Bad concluded. And obviously you couldn't have that spinoff if Saul was dead. So I thought, oh, does he die?
Well, don't limit your imagination, because it could be before all of this went down.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're true. You're right. A prequel.
Right, right.
So
I mean,
now continue.
No, I would just I would rule it out for a mind like Vince Gilligan. I don't think he would limit himself based on the future of a spinoff.
Okay. Good thinking.
I don't know.
So can we talk about technical issues last night regarding cable boxes and whatnot?
Oh, Time Warner Cable, you are not my friend. What's your cable provider, Jim?
Time Warner Cable.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
So
my wife and I had guests over last night, and because they don't have cable, so we thought we'll make some dinner, watch some Breaking Bad, socialize. Well, Breaking Bad was not a part of our evening last night. So once our guests left, my wife convinced me to stay up for the midnight showing.
Oh, my gosh.
Of Breaking Bad, which we did because, as you probably know, you can't really go on the internet on Monday if you haven't watched the episode. And we pride, you know, we love to be surprised. So we sacrificed some sleep, but we saw it last night. So
wait.
I'm Warner Cable, no thanks to you.
So you had no AMC whatsoever?
It was something weird. It wouldn't give me a picture. It was supposed to record. We noticed the red light wasn't on because we were going to watch it a little bit later. Never came on. Then we couldn't get a picture.
Skip the commercials.
A couple calls to Time Warner. Nothing going. Finally got it back on, but it was too late. Yeah.
Well, here's my story. Well, you work for the competitor now, but the MTV Video Music Awards were last night.
Right.
And I had a whole game plan down. I was going to record Breaking Bad. Both the VMAs and Breaking Bad started at 9 o'clock. I was going to watch the first 20 minutes of the VMAs. At 9:20, I was going to switch over to Breaking Bad and just fast forward through all the commercials.
Right.
Freaking Breaking Bad did not record on my DVR.
Oh.
And it doesn't have one of those start over features either. Because for some reason, there's some shows on Time Warner where you hit the center button and it takes you back to the beginning of the show. That didn't happen. So my wife and I looked at each other like, do we stay up till midnight? And I said, no, I got to wake up early. So we missed Breaking Bad last night. So this morning, I ended up, I think, recording the 3 a.m. Breaking Bad. So this morning, we watched a half hour. My wife got a couple phone calls. It just kept getting longer and longer throughout the day. And I think at 2 or 3 o'clock today, I finally finished the episode and I watched it in 3 or 4 different chunks.
Wow.
So if I'm out of sorts today,
so you had three or four cliffhangers.
Yeah, I did.
When the rest of us just had one.
Right. Right. So, and then I don't know if you remember this. Episode 9, they had a Breaking Bad marathon leading up to the premiere, and the audio was not in sync.
Weird, I don't remember that.
Yeah, so I had to reboot my TV. It took 10 minutes to reboot, and then with 3 minutes to spare, the premiere came on, and the audio was set straight. I knew some people, though, their audio was off.
That, yeah. So, Time Warner.
Yeah. Hey, did you watch the VMAs at all?
I caught some highlights this morning.
Okay. Are you allowed to talk about those contractually?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. We can still make money off of you guys.
Okay. Did you have any highlights or lowlights from the VMAs?
Wow. Well, I think everyone's talking about Miley Cyrus, right? That's the big...
Yeah. I just felt bad for Robin. I felt bad for Robin Thicke.
I mean, he agreed to do it, I'm assuming, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, on paper, it might have looked good, but then when he was actually in the, on the stage, he's like, oh, man, why did I do this? Have my first number one. It's the song of the summer, and I got to share the stage with her? Come on!
Really strange pairing. The only thing I will say about the VMAs is I was most intrigued, as most people were, of the NSYNC reunion.
Mm-hmm.
So this morning, I watched a clip of that, of the performance, and I got to ask you, Jim, what was the point of that? Why did they even... They weren't even singing. It was a track.
Yeah, just for nostalgia. I mean, that whole thing was, people were talking about that for 2 weeks. So,
right. Hyped it up.
Yeah, they hyped it up. And Justin was probably like, all right, you know what? I'll bring them on stage for like a second, and then that's it. And just have some track playing. They get a second. So, yeah, I think that was just for hype.
Jim, I have to ask you, you invited me on this show to talk about Breaking Bad. Was it all just a big ruse to get me to come on here and talk about NSYNC?
No, because you've been on before.
Does NSYNC come into play Breaking Bad somewhere?
There's a metaphor. Somewhere in there, there's a metaphor. Joey Fatone's little pedestal did not go down, so think about that. There's five NSYNCers. They were not all in sync.
Ooh.
You run with that. Oh, before we go, Mark, and we've got to let Mark go in a little bit because he is the commissioner of a fantasy football league, and there is a draft tonight.
Serious stuff.
Did you catch where Jesse was supposed to meet the guy who was going to take him to his new life?
Yes.
They said on the corner of Juan Thibault and Osuna.
Oh,
do you know Juan Thibault? I forget the address, but he's like, yeah, 5363 Juan Thibault, apartment B. Yeah.
Poor Gale.
Yeah. Stuff goes down on Juan Thibault.
Gale now in low winter sun. Not that I would know by watching it, but they forced it down your throat during the commercial.
No, I'm so mad that they have any show on after Breaking Bad. Low Winter Sun could be the greatest show in the history of mankind, but I won't know now because I can't watch a show after Breaking Bad.
No, it's impossible. I mean, they tried with the comedy, maybe to try to break things up after a heavy show. But I don't know. I find my heart beating a little faster, by the middle of an episode of Breaking Bad. So you're right. I'm ready to come down and try to get some sleep after seeing Breaking Bad.
It's either sleep, or I think they should put Talking Bad on right after Breaking Bad.
That would make the most sense. I mean, obviously they're trying to get ratings, but I can't imagine that it holds up. I'm sure it drops off big time.
Yeah. So, Mark, before you go, any speculation for what's going to happen next week or in future episodes?
I have a lot of speculation. Like I said, am I allowed to talk about the title for next week? Because I happen to read that. It's called Rabid Dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously from the promos. It's going to be about Jesse. What do you do with a rabid dog, Jim?
You put a muzzle on him?
No.
You shoot it in the head? You shoot it in the head?
That's what you do. Oh, Old Yeller style. I'm just saying, based off of the promo that we saw and the title for next week, I'm pretty sure, like I said earlier, that we're going to find out the fate of Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad.
And here's the thing. We can't miss any more episodes. Ooh, you're going to be out of town next weekend, too. The thing is, we can't miss any more episodes because all you have to do is look on Twitter or Yahoo or whatever, and it's going to say, Jesse Pinkman dies. And you're like, no!
Well, it, you know, that's what I try to tell anyone who hasn't seen the show yet or is trying to catch up, or says, oh, I'll catch it on DVD or on Netflix whenever it's over. I'm trying to tell them that I did the same thing with The Sopranos, and even though I had nothing to do with the show, never watched it, didn't care about it at the time, I knew what happened in the last episode. So that's what I've been trying to tell people about Brain Dead. We will know, because it will be, you know, it'll be a cultural thing for at least a few days following, especially if something big in the plot happens, which, like I said, I believe next week is going to be a huge episode, very pivotal in the all, you know, in the storyline. So we'll see.
Yes.
But even though I'll be out of town, Jim, I will make sure I catch, catch the show. I don't know if my mom is a big fan of Breaking Bad, but she, no, it's just 40 minutes.
Yeah. And it's 9 o'clock, you know, the day is winding down. I will be out of town too, and I am already planning where I'm watching the show.
There you go.
And I have no speculation as to what's going to happen next week, because I thought they were going to make Walt a good guy. It doesn't seem like I was right. So, Mark, go do your fantasy football draft. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, give your wife a hug from us.
Will do.
For Mark Laux, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see Yinz later.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.